now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, I have a very important discussion with a friend of mine, Mike Patterson, talk about his encounters with Neff and a tribe of Sasquatch in the wilds of Ontario, Canada. And a lot has been going on as far as interactions with Neff and that tribe. So without any further ado, Mike Patterson, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Happy to be here, James. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, tell us what's been going on of late, because you've been putting out these posts on Facebook and talking about the increasing communications that you've had with Neff and perhaps other members of his tribe. Now, take us to the beginning of how this communication started and fast forward to today to see if there's been any kind of evolution in that communication process.
Well, this started like way back near the start of this, right? Where we actually started with this little writing pad and a crayon. And it was actually, I bought a whiteboard and I did some kind of, I did a drawing of, you know, them and us sort of thing. And they had drawn these lines connecting us. And that's how that really all started with the writing back and forth. And it developed into drawings and, and, you know, this would start off outside, right? Because we didn't know what their abilities were. I had no idea they had abilities at this point, right? It just all developed over time. And things would be started outside with written communications, with cameras being left out for them to play with, that sort of thing. And eventually everything developed to a point where it's all been moved indoors since, you know, we've learned that they possess these abilities. And, you know, it's at a point now where I'm leaving a sketch pad and a chalkboard on the kitchen table. So this has been something that has been ongoing for quite some time. And I've received dozens of drawings from them. And writing, and they write in English. They've actually they have written in other language as well. You know, some of which I posted on Facebook and stuff. And recently, you know, I just decided to show some of the drawings and writings that they've presented to us. So what happens was when we get there, I tend to while we're still unloading our gear. First thing I'll do, I'll walk in the cottage, bring my first load of stuff, and then I'll put the stuff on the table, the sketch pad, the chalkboard. I'll ask a question, and then I'll walk outside. And there's nobody in the cottage when this is happening, right? So I tend to get, sometimes it happens very quickly. Other times it might take a little bit, but, they tend to give drawings and writings. Most visits, and this time, this last visit was very, there's a whole kind of somber mood going on because of this whole COVID-19, right? You know, things have really shifted dramatically. So, I just wanted to be responsible. So when I got there, Dwayne's still unloading his truck. I'd walked into the cottage, put the chalkboard and sketch pad down, and I leave some chalk and a marker, and I ask the question, does Dwayne or myself have this virus that's going around the world? And I think they fully understood the apprehension, the anxiety going on, so they actually answered like that. I walked out, Dwayne's still over this truck. I went and got some more stuff. And I come back in, he hadn't even been in yet. And I walk in, and there's written on the chalkboard, and it says, "Not yet." So I didn't like that very much. You know, it's like, oh, great, not yet. Didn't like that answer at all. Except, like, thankfully that it wasn't a yes, you know. If they said yes, I would have just packed everything up and left right away. That was my plan, right? So lately, you know, I've been asking them questions, but language and most of the time it's improv. It's on the spot. You know, sometimes I have predetermined questions that I'll ask. Sometimes I get answers. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I get carried away and I might ask two or three questions and I'll get an answer and I won't know what the hell it was in reference to. So it's very easy to get a little carried away with, you know, because you're sitting there waiting. Sometimes nothing happens for an hour or two or three or whatever it might be. And you'll ask a different question, right? So the last one I had asked, we had gotten there. And let me pull this up here. I had asked, the first thing I had asked, or Dwayne asked actually, was, do you guys know what they're trying to do to us? And they wrote, same as us. You can actually see they put same of us, A-B, first, and then they corrected themselves. And then I asked, are they trying to kill us all? And they wrote, yes. And then I asked, did humans create the COVID-19 or the coronavirus going around the world right now? And they wrote, yes, bad humans, your God. And, you know, the whole your God thing, I basically at this point, I take it into consideration that this world is, you know, it's enveloped in darkness. We're being manipulated from every angle. They have their tentacles everywhere. They own everything, the banking system, the education system, everything. They have their hands in everything. We're being mass manipulated, and we always have been, right? So from my understanding, these people, you know, they're a bunch of Satan-worshipping, they're dark, right? And these are bloodlines that go throughout history, and I think the world is in for one hell of a big awakening. I don't know how this is all going to unfold. I do have faith myself that things will, at the end of the tunnel, there's light, right? But as far as all the writings and that go, yeah, so I just basically been asking questions, and they do respond. They completely understand the context. They're highly telepathic. I've asked them once about language. What language do your people speak? What do your people know? And they wrote all. So I don't know if that's, say, one particular family, like Neff's family, if they know all language. I don't know. But they did give me one thing on the chalkboard at one point, because I'd asked them a question about language. And I said, they've written a word. I can't remember what it is offhand. And I asked them, what language is this? And they wrote down a name of a language. And then afterwards, they wrote again, and they put speak here. And they put an arrow, basically stating that this is the language that we speak here. You know, inferring that they speak other language elsewhere. You know, that's the impression I got anyways, right? So this whole development of written communication, it's progressed over the years, and it's pretty fantastic stuff.
Does it seem to you that you have the same interlocutor, the same communicator all the time? Is it enough, or once in a while, by the energy, the tone, do you get the impression you're communicating with some other Squatch other than Neff?
Different family members, for sure. Yeah, there's you can tell by the writing. Like I had written the word Ninadadwa, which Neff yelled out on March 20th, 2015. And recently I had asked what that meant. And they had written Invader Go, not referring to me, to the all the trespassing going on with these BSRO people and whoever else is involved. And the writing Invader Go was extremely neat, very neat. And then I rubbed it out. I have the chalkboard right there, but I've been putting it in the backyard recently. There was the plane that flew over the cottage during the last visit, which was really low. And we'd asked the question about the plane, and they'd written bad plane for us, for them, for the Sasquatch, and drawn this plane with this surveillance, you know, stuff coming out of the front of it, you could tell. And the writing on that was, it was difficult to read. Actually, Dwayne, he picked it out right away. And I actually asked the question, is that what it says? And they even wrote yes. And then they broke the chalk in half. And because we were outside of the cottage when this answer came, they broke the chalk in half and placed it on top of the chalkboard. And when we came back in, I lifted it up and the little yes was written underneath it. You can tell by the writing that there's different members involved here.
And they're conveying to you.
Sorry, Jane, I don't mean to interrupt.
Oh, please.
It's really bright. I'm just going to pull this. You can edit
sure.
That. Just super bright in the background there, right? I think that probably helps a bit.
So they were conveying to you the impression that they were being sought after by whoever was in that light plane with the sensors, because you showed me that drawing. There was like this energy, kind of fan-shaped energy pattern coming out from beneath the plane, like it was a surveillance sensor or something, which suggests perhaps that they've developed some kind of means to track the Squatch. And apparently you were told in this communication that the Squatch are aware that they're being sought after and that this is one of the means that the controllers use.
Yep. If you don't mind, I can even throw on that piece of audio and you can hear how low that plane was.
Oh, please.
Here it is right here. Just a short little clip of the plane's engine and how close it is over top of the cottage. We saw it through the, we're sitting in the living room when we saw it through the, sorry, I hit the wrong thing there. We saw it coming towards the cottage through the bay window looking out over the lake there. Cessna-type plane. I don't know if it's military or BFRO. I would think military would use a helicopter, but you never know, right? And that's me opening the door to check it out, both Dwayne and I. It's right there.
And this, excuse me, and this occurred shortly before, during, or after a communication with Neff and company?
Well, we were there, throughout the day, right? Things happen already. The communication started almost immediately on arrival when we got there, with me asking the question about the, if we had the virus or not, and they understood our anxiety and, just to ease our mind, they answered us like that. So we had an answer within, we had just got there. So, sometimes they show their presence immediately, almost immediately. Other times it might take a little bit, but we've had activity on literally 100% of the visits. They've always shown their presence. It happens throughout the night, multiple incidents.
And would you say the surveillance upon you and the Squatch tribe has intensified? Because you mentioned to me there were times in the past when in a completely different context, you're just living out your life with your band members, and suddenly out of the blue, one of these light planes shows up in a completely off-the-wall place.
Well, I had another incident. Can't remember the date, but I have buddies that I play music with, and we were jamming, and we'd gone, we stepped outside, and a helicopter showed up. You know, we watched this thing coming in. It was a black helicopter, and it had no markings on it whatsoever. That's illegal, highly illegal. You have to have identification numbers on your, on the tail and that. And so this came by. I ran in. I had a video camera. So I ran in. I grabbed it, come back outside. You know, the guys are all still standing out there having a beer. And it came back. It circled and came back right over top of us. I managed to grab a 13-second video clip of this unmarked black helicopter with surveillance, clearly surveillance camera underneath it. And yeah, that was strange. You know, it's like, what are you doing here? I sent a thing into a question into the, I guess it'd be the FAA, asking about, why is there an unmarked black helicopter circling our building? And I never got a response, which isn't surprising. They said nothing.
Yeah, just for some context, covert operations and the black military have frequently used light planes. The whole Iran-Contra period, they were stealing light planes from private airports all over America, changing the tail registration numbers and then using them in covert operations, drug trafficking and arms smuggling, et cetera, and even in wartime, as recently as the Vietnam era, they were still using light planes as spotter aircraft and stuff. So they will definitely use light planes and load it down with sensor equipment. That would be very easy for them. Now, you sense on the part of the Squatch that they know the kind of turmoil upheaval that's going on down here. Have they ever indicated to you what kind of long-term plans they have to, in their own way, ride out the storm? Do they have means to protect themselves? They do seem to have an interdimensional capability, at least some of them. So that, to me, would provide a means of escape, if you will, or at least, provide some degree of protection.
Yeah, there's... as far as the whole interdimensional thing, with me, it's not scenes. It's a 100%, knowing this is an ability that they have. Ness family does anyways, right? So, and thank God for that, because, these people trespassing, harassing, stalking, flying planes over the cottage with surveillance, Ness family's invisible. And I love that. They're invisible, interdimensional. They can go wherever they want to go, materialize, dematerialize it, anywhere they choose, it seems. From my experience, this is my understanding. So I've not gotten to a point of, asking those sorts of questions. Like, because this, what's going on now, it's basically all brand new, right? This just unfolded, this whole global lockdown. The opportunity hasn't really presented itself yet where I can delve into deeper questions regarding their safety or, their plan or, like that.
It's quite possible, considering how long the Sasquatch have been around, that they've seen these civilizations come and go. I mean, think of the Atlantean civilization, think of the Lemurian civilization and other civilizations. There's all kinds of huge mega structures in Central and South America, and there's probably pyramid structures underground in North America somewhere. They just haven't released that fact. So I'm sure that I wouldn't say it's old hat to them, but they've kind of been through this process before, watching things unfold here on the surface.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, I don't know how long they've been around, but I believe a hell of a lot longer than us. So, and their abilities allows them to see basically, you know, what goes on behind closed doors, because consciousness is all one, right? And my understanding, there's no secrets among their people because of their abilities. And I would assume with us too, that they can read us, because, you know, everything is connected. You know, we just don't have that that ability to see one another's consciousness as they do. And, you know, maybe some people do to a certain level, but the, you know, the level of that they show to have is just, it's unprecedented. It's absolutely incredible.
And I'm glad you refer to them as people too, because there's these persistent efforts by those you call the apers to relegate the Sasquatch to merely hairy hominoid status. Like they're just overgrown apes that are bipedal, that just roam the forest, and there's no sophistication to them. There's no intellect to them. They don't have a society as such as we would understand it. They're being described basically as dumb animals when they're anything but. They've been here all along, and when you listen to the accounts of the Native Americans and indigenous peoples in different parts of the world, they talk about in the distant past, some of them, some of these cultures, it had some degree of relationship, interactions with these beings, that they lived in kind of harmony with each other and had some understanding of them, which today you see the contrast with us humans, where we're being made to mistrust each other, the whole social distancing thing. They're conditioning everybody to be snitches, to narc people out if they think that they're behaving in ways that's detrimental to the rest of the herd, so-called. But with the Sasquatch, at least the tribe that you're interacting with, and perhaps some of the others, they very much have a sense of community to have lasted this long.
Yeah, they're definitely family-oriented. And all these people, you know, on this ape mentality, none of them have contact. None of them. Or else it would change them forever. You know, they may have had an experience, maybe a telepathic experience that just, what the hell was that? Or something that, where they will not talk about it, because they do not want to be, I guess, shunned by their peers, right? But organizations like I'll call them the BSRO. That's my term for them now. You know? Organizations like that are, you know, they're trying to be the big man on campus, that, you know, the number one organization in the subject of Sasquatch. When in actuality, they avoid truth. They some of their members are just show disgusting tactics and behaviors, infiltration, slanderous actions towards others, when they have zero understanding of what the Sasquatch people are capable of, and then, you know, they're really just about making money, bringing out groups of people to go bang on trees and blast Sasquatch vocals into the forest, take their money, tell them to bring their own equipment and food, give them a location and, you know, a little few tidbits of information. You know, it's basically just to line their pockets. That's all they're about. And, you know, there's going to come a time where this organization is going to fall flat on their face, because truth has a way of coming out, and then, you know, organizations like that are just going to fall by the wayside. So, see you, Matt Moneymaker. Only a matter of time, buddy.
And what they are fearful of, and by extension, their masters, because clearly they're working for someone, they're working towards an agenda to minimize the true nature of the Sasquatch, because the Sasquatch, by word and deed, have showed you and others that they are interdimensional, at least some of them. But by extension, they're also implying that you who are perceiving these experiences, that are having the mind speak, that are having the Sasquatch come in your dreams, that are having the Sasquatch materialize things in midair, right in your own homes, what, to me anyway, the clear implication is the Sasquatch are saying, you too have these abilities. If you just over time learn to develop them and do a lot of self-work, a lot of self-healing, and that, my friend, terrifies the controllers, because if there was even a small, tiny percentage of people in society who had these X-Men mutant type powers, game's over, because the control system would go under in no time flat. And the last thing they want is to let people know that they have this immortal nature to themselves, this multidimensional capability, a metaphysical capability, if you will.
Yeah, we are energy beings, right? We're loving energy beings that are our purest source, and you know we have this body to spend a little bit of time on this earth and whatever evolve our consciousness, remember who we are, and develop and evolve ourselves individually, which, even though still we're as a collective, we get this human experience, and there just happens to be some in power who have held on to these bloodlines, royalty, and you know, whoever else involved with them, that you know, they're well aware of all this stuff, obviously, but they choose to serve the dark aspect of all this interdimensional stuff. One sec. Hey, Minus, come here, bud. Come on. I took him. He's blind, right? I took him outside earlier, so now he's is this a nice day? He's all like, that's it. I want out. Come here, buddy.
Yeah, it's my little man.
Linus is his name?
Minus.
Minus.
Yeah, the opposite of plus. Because he's got a half ear there. See that?
Ah, I see that. Clever. Yeah. And then it's a mark of distinction.
He's a good little guy. He was a feral cat, right? They caught a couple hundred of them, and they gave them their shots, fixed them, and then that's how they marked them. They snipped their ears.
Oh, really?
Which is just horrible.
Yes.
So. He showed up my backyard one day, right? So.
Has Midas noticed the Sasquatch activity? Has he kind of looked around and stared at different things and moved his paw? And...
Not really. Nothing that I've noticed. You know, I get a periodic happening indoors once in a while. The second day I moved in, I had a mask on the wall from up the Amazon from one of my parents' trips that they brought back, and one of the beads under the eye fell out. And the second day I moved in, so I'm unpacking. I stuck it on the shelf, and the bead rolled out of the eye, fell out. So it rolled out to the little crack between the shelf and the wall. And, you know, I could see it. I couldn't get it out with my fingers, so I just left it. Next day, I grabbed a butter knife to go pop it out. And I'm looking, and it's like, it's gone. There's nobody else here. It's just me and this little guy. And he's not up there popping it out. And I'm sitting there looking for it. And then there's a shelf about yay high above it. And all of a sudden, the beads are bouncing on the shelf above it right in front of my face. It's like, ah, okay, you guys are here. And then there was something that happened recently where, you know, something disappeared out of the fridge that I know was in there, right? So little things like that, they tend to happen. This has been ongoing for years. I'm used to it, right? Like at the cottage, the last couple visits, they've dropped marbles right into my hand.
Oh.
I'm standing. I'm standing there inside the cottage. The one visit, I had my hand like this, and they put a marble right here. You know, just, you know, Dwayne's over there. I said, "Oh, got a marble." You know, or I got a glass in my hand, and I hear tink, and there it is. This has happened so much, James. It's a normal part of my existence, the whole paranormal part. I'm very used to it, and I thoroughly enjoy it. It doesn't freak me out. I just want more of it, right? It's, you know, when you experience that stuff, it's fascinating. Apports, they call them, right?
What do they call them?
Apports.
I wonder what the, if any, the metaphorical symbolism of the marble is. Maybe worlds or worlds within worlds, or handing you a marble, it represents the world, the earth, or whatever the case may be. But I've heard from others too, so similar things with marbles, similar things with stones and crystals. So definitely they're into the art of gifting, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's funny, since this whole thing, you know, started with Neff and marbles, I've heard of all kinds of other people receiving marbles. And, you know, it could even just be simple as it's a easy object for them to hold on. You know, sometimes the simple explanation is the most valid one. But I don't really know, right? I ask sometimes, you know, you guys out of marbles yet? And then I'll get some.
I wouldn't even know where to get them. So they're manifesting them from somewhere. Maybe there's some marble factory somewhere that keeps running out of them or something.
I think at the beginning of this that Neff or, you know, somebody in his family found a container in somebody's yard or something, or, you know, because they've shown it to me. They can go wherever they want. They can go in your place and take what they want. So maybe somebody had a container of them laying around that had a couple thousand marbles in it, and they've been handing them out ever since. I don't know. I'm just speculating, obviously. But the dollar store sells them too, right? These little bags. Because we bought them and gifted them, and some of them have been given back. You could tell that it's like, oh, okay, those are newer ones.
How about the behavior of the juveniles and the young ones? Do they behave like you would expect a younger being to behave? Is there a cheekiness or perhaps a silliness to them or a mischievousness to them that you don't really see in the older ones? What have you noticed about that?
Yeah, you know, they are tricksters. They are humorous. There's always humor being shown in their activity, and I don't think they ever lose that, you know, because I remember it was March 20th, 2015. That was my last visit when, you know, Dwayne and I had that fallout for a while, and I hadn't seen the big guy's print yet, and that was about 80 visits over 2.5 years. I had not seen it yet, and that visit, he left his print beside the path going to the cottage, and I had a layer of snow in the car. And he put a partial print on the back window, you know, which is, and then Neff left his on the tail light on the, and I was always casting footprints. And if you go to my video Above and Beyond, at one point I'm filming the back of the car where Neff's footprint is on my tail light. And if you listen real close, you can hear one of them whispering, "Casting." It's hilarious, really. But the little ones, they're always pulling funny stuff. It's very lighthearted though, right? Like a couple visits back, I went, you know, I had snowmobile boots, so I went to put on my boot, and I'm glad I didn't put my foot down hard, because I was like, what's that? There was an egg in there. So I almost squished an egg. And then I got home, I got my camera bag, I got all my camera gear, and there was two eggs in there. One was, I think one or both were broken, I can't remember, from me just tossing it in the back seat. And then I had a bag of potatoes up there, and I got home, and there was a couple eggs in there. You know, so they had this thing, ongoing thing with eggs recently, too, right? Just being funny. You know, it's always, there's never any anything that, harmful. You know, like a broken egg on a, you know, on my camera didn't hurt it. It's just, and they didn't break it over that. You know, that was from me throwing it in the back seat, right? It's just lighthearted humor from their part. So it's always been like that.
You mean you leaned back with the, and you reached back with your arm, dropped your camera, and it landed on an egg?
No, no, it was inside the bag.
Oh, it was inside the bag.
Yeah.
Well, I see the humor in the footprint on the, you know, the back of your car on the windshield, because yeah, a lot of these BSOR types are running around and trying to get that elusive or not so elusive caster plaster footprint, and here are these squatch saying, well, they should try to get a plaster cast out of this, right? And then they put this footprint on you know, in these unlikely places. It'd make you wonder, well, were they standing sideways, or, you know, but that's the nature of their metaphysical interdimensional selves, that they can put these prints in really off the wall places that don't make any sense in our 3D linear viewpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there was a dirty print on the ceiling one day. It would not surprise me in the least, you know, what I've seen they're capable of. Like we've witnessed so many footprints at this point, you know, half the time, not even measuring them, just take some film footage and wipe them out. Like that visit, a few visits back, we were outside and there was a, I had just gone up to the gift tree, left some food, I come down and Dwayne's looking for prints while I'm up there. And, you know, I scan the whole area while I'm out there too, right? And then I came down the hill and I'm always looking, right? And I know there was nothing there. And then suddenly this 18-inch footprint appears out of thin air right in front of my car. And you know that's got to be 10 feet tall. And then we're looking for, you know, we're still looking around because this can happen anytime, literally. And we just walk this one area and we're standing there and suddenly Dwayne pokes me. I thought it was one of them poking me. But, it, you know, he's just, he's basically telling me, don't step backwards. And I look and there's a fresh footprint from a younger individual. It might have been about 11, 12 inches. That just appeared right behind us. And we had just walked there and looked there. There was nothing there. And then there's this clear footprint that appeared while we were standing there. So there was at least two individuals there that exposing footprints in real time with us standing there, showing their, you know, interdimensional aspect that, hey, we're right here with you.
It was a single print without one in front of it or behind it.
Yeah, that's typical, though. You know, I remember years back, in one of my videos, I think it's a left foot, and then there was about 5 feet left foot. And I was like, what the hell is he doing? Jumping on one foot, but there's no impact, you know, in the snow, if you're jumping, right? There's no impact. It's clean. It's like, how the hell? And then, you know, after a while, I learned. It's like, no, I'm just walking normally and choosing to leave that footprint. They don't have to. They can move without, move through snow without leaving any sign. And I've also had the experience being in the forest in my tent on, you know, dead still night. And I could hear branch breaking, you know, maybe it's 50, 100 feet away. You know, it's clear enough to hear. And I remember saying out loud once, you can come closer. And when it's dead still up there, you can literally hear a pin drop, right? And then I'm by myself and suddenly I hear this shuffle, like right there outside my tent wall, right there at my head. And it's like, oh, I'm here now. And you didn't hear me come up here. So they can move up on you completely silent, without a sound. Just part of that interdimensional ability they have.
Sonia Zohar tells a story of this kind of rushing sound they make when they come up to you very fast, invisibly, and then go away. And then it, I think she described that happening to her as well. It's like this kind of, it's a, I don't know if it's a greeting or just a way to let you know that they're around. The ability to just, in super flash-like fashion, just go from here to there and everywhere and, you know, depart. But it's kind of like a calling card to let you know that they've been there.
Yeah, we had an incident where one of them come rushing at us. Just a display, right? Harmless display, really. And I'd rented a cottage for a week. And this was late at night. And I'd left her back in the cottage. And I went walking up the long driveway. My back was sore. So I laid down on the gravel road, you know, surrounded by woods there. And as soon as I laid down, you know, I put my head down, I heard a footprint or a footstep inches from the back of my head just come down, you know, let me know, oh, right here. And I sat up and I gave a little chuckle and I said, hold on, I'll be right back. And I went and got Sonia and then we went, you know, back there and we sat down and it was, I don't remember how long it was, but it wasn't very long at all. And we got this rushing, charging towards us through the woods, right? Yeah, it freaks you out a little bit. You know, for me, I thought for a second, is it a bear, right? And then it just kind of pivots and goes the other way, and the sound just disappears into nothingness. Very strange, fun for me. Anyways, I love it.
Have you heard from Leanne lately and what she's been up to? Is she still out there in the wilds of Ontario as well?
Yeah, I talked to Leanne just the other day, actually. And, you know, she's very much into the whole structure aspect of all this. And she's constantly documenting structures, finding new structures, and rock cairns, and, you know, all kinds of awesome looking builds. So yeah, she's very involved with that part of it. And, you know, she thoroughly enjoys doing that.
Yeah, I've got to get her back on the show too, because she's got a lot of personal experiences as well, not only of the Sasquatch variety, but of other types of experiences. And we talked, you and I have talked in the past, that there seems to be, at some level, some kind of ET connection to the Sasquatch. There seems to be, I haven't really delved into it, I just feel this intuitively, and the few videos and whatnot that have come across my newsfeed, that there seems to be an upsurge in ET activity around the world. Do you have any sense or feeling of how this may play out as far as the Sasquatch and or the ETs are concerned? Because perhaps the ETs are making, or some of the ET groups are making their presence felt at this point for a purpose. Maybe it has something to do with what's going on down here, you know, with us and this whole lockdown thing. And perhaps I'd like your thoughts also. Again, this is delving into speculation. What is your feeling of what the Sasquatch will do? Because clearly the powers that be seem to be intensifying their search and their hunt for them. So things are coming to a boil all across the board.
Definitely looks like we're coming to a head, that's for sure. And I've had my own experiences. I've had five UFO experiences throughout this, four of them in Neff's area and one of them elsewhere. Two of them were 15 days apart. One was during day, one was at night, but right in front of me. I've had other experiences, a visit in a dream at one point by a young blonde-haired girl with a very piercing green third eye, and she put her hand on my head and she said something to me, right? And it actually, I broke down emotionally, and then I woke up. You know, I'm not going to say what she said, but it was good, right? And so there's a whole connection between the two, for sure. I'd wage my life on that. I'd bet the farm. It's the whole consciousness aspect of it. There's, I think, you know, at this point in history, we're just what's going down with the dark forces that are trying to lock us down. You know, the Sasquatch and the ET aspect, they're all aware of this. And I think there's going to come to a point where they're going to expose themselves in a big way. And I don't think it's very far off. You know, I have no idea how this is all going to go down. I've been shown by the Sasquatch that they told me soon your people will know. That's 4 years ago this month. And I've watched things progress, you know, baby step process since then, with more and more people gaining experience and seeing them as a people and their abilities. And I can see it unfolding. And I think it's been coming to it's going to get to a certain point where, okay, they think we're ready for something bigger. And, you know, from what I'm seeing lately too, it seems that the whole UFO phenomena seems to be picking up the sightings and that too. So yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff, really, and scary at the same time. Not with all that, but you know, with what's going on with the, you know, I see this stuff about Bill Gates and this whole wanting to push this vaccine implant, and I'm like, yeah, screw you, buddy. You know, over my dead body. And, you know, this is a whole satanic agenda, basically. It's all part of it, right? And so I'm hoping that these beings of light step in sooner than later, you know, at the right time before everything goes to, you know what.
Yeah, there's been some discussion apparently amongst the elders in Australia that at least some of the Palladians may be coming back, some of the Palladian factions, because of all the stuff that's going on. It may be part of this apocalyptic revealing. This planet seems to be, and I'm just speaking intuitively here, almost a bottleneck where all these souls are kind of stopped up with a cork, and they're caught up in this endless cycle of reincarnation. And we're at that point again, or we're on the cusp again, of all these celestially driven cataclysms coming back. And so both sides, if you will, if you're looking at it from a light and a black perspective, or a light and a darkness perspective, seem to be aware of this celestially driven timetable. And the dark forces are shooting for all the marbles now, no pun intended. It is just, they know that their time is limited. They have to get everything in place for them. Otherwise, they lose control. And that is their biggest fear. These control freaks, their biggest fear is losing control, because then they become irrelevant. Then they're no longer major players, and they can't manipulate and control us the way they have all this time.
We're getting a lag here.
What's that? I'm sorry. How about now? Have I come back?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it said your internet connection is unstable. I don't know if it's because of what I was saying or what, but in a nutshell.
No, this has been it's been ongoing throughout this whole thing. It's because everybody's on the internet because everybody's home, right?
So yeah.
Yeah, that's what's been going on. My phone signal at home is absolutely horrible. I can't even talk on the phone. It takes forever for text to go through. You know, it's a double-edged sword. I like it, and it's frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, for some of us, this whole isolation business is no big deal, because there are parts of me that like to go out, interact, and go to pubs and go to restaurants and whatnot. But then there's the other part of me that I'm just as comfortable or even more relaxed just staying at home and doing my own thing, right? So it doesn't really bother me that much. But the point I was making was, I think it's possible that not only from an ET perspective, but from a so-called cryptid perspective, to use that generic term, that more and more cryptids will start to manifest their presence all across the board. I'm already seeing that. I wouldn't call myself a cryptozoologist. There's some people that spent all their time doing all this kind of cryptid work. But just from what I've come across, it seems like a lot of these cryptids, whether it's Sasquatch or whether it's dogmen or other beings, they're coming more and more into the suburbs. They're coming more and more into the urban areas. And because some of them have this metaphysical capability or use other means of infiltration, it's not a big deal for them. They can do this. So more and more people are describing seeing these cryptids in the most unlikely places. And I think that trend will continue, Mike.
They can even, I've had activity happen in my car in downtown Toronto. You know, it doesn't matter where. I remember I was sitting there having a conversation with Leanne on the phone once. And, I have this, one of those hand weaves hanging from my rear view mirror, on this, leather string. Right. And it's never wrapped itself around the mirror. If I slam on the brake, you know, jump on the gas, crank the wheel one side, it'll just swing a little bit. That's it. I've tried. So I'm sitting there having a conversation with Leanne at one point, and, you know, we're on the phone, and she's having activity going on. And at one point I say, geez, it seems like everybody's got activity going on except me. And I guess I had averted my eyes for a second, and I look, and suddenly my thing's wrapped around the mirror. And I know it wasn't like that seconds earlier. You know, I would notice it, right? And it's like, it just blows my mind, you know? And yeah, so activity can happen anywhere.
And part of the fear of this control system is us not only doing all the inner shadow work, healing ourselves, developing more of this metaphysical interdimensional side of ourselves, but the fact that people like yourself, people like Leanne and others, many others, have this interaction, ongoing interaction, with beings that are clearly interdimensional and have some connection with extraterrestrials. It's part of their paradigm that we should not have this experience, that we should just be kind of dumb hominids and dumb ape men ourselves and not realize we have this within us, but also this capability of developing these relationships, these interpersonal relationships. I think that is a big part of their harassment of people like yourself and others who have developed this connection with these interdimensional beings.
You know, like my own situation, I think it's actually answered a lot of questions of my life. You know, why things were as they were when I was young, you know, as a kid growing up, this and that. You know, it's enabled me to connect dots. And, you know, I think they choose who they make contact with. And I see that there's, you know, there's an exposure going on here that they want us to know about them, but they don't want to freak us out. They don't want to scare the hell out of us, right? So, you know, Neff's family has shown just a completely compassionate, loving approach. You know, I've been whacked over the head, like pumping up my air mattress in my tent. He's playing whack-a-mole with my head there one time, but, you know, it wasn't an intent to harm me. I guess, you know, he just didn't understand how fragile I was. And, you know, I think that they've given what they have to myself. I think there's more than one reason behind that, but one reason being that they know that I have the backbone, and I have the guts to stand up and speak this, and I can withstand all the BS that, you know, comes with that, you know, all the ridicule and attacks and this and that. And and it's been a journey, you know, developing a thicker skin to, you know, stand up through all that. And hey, I've reacted lots, you know, and I've been called an a-hole many times by many people because, you know, they come at me in a confrontational kind of way, even with words, right, through text and that. And I'm basically like, screw you, you know, my attitude towards them, right? So you don't know shite. I have the experience, and you don't know what's going on here. So at this point, you know, I've calmed down quite a bit, but I think they've given me what they have because they want us to share our experiences to help dispel fear and show that they are people. You know, this is not some ape in the woods, some animal. These are people, and they're ancient race, highly developed.
And again, it goes back to the notion that, you know, they want to keep this at the ape-man level, that the powers that be do not like the reality of these beings having this ability to come right into your house, to manifest their presence right in your moving vehicle or in a car or wherever you might be, because that undermines their control system. And perish the thought from their standpoint that people like yourself, this is just another day for you. This is what your life is like, right? Because you've permanently, from that standpoint, you've permanently got at least one foot in this other reality, which they deny exist, right? So that definitely puts you on their short list of people to try to discredit. And I must say, folks, that it just the amount of garbage hurled at Mike Patterson is, it defies belief. And the you have the backbone, and you're the ideal person to get this information out, that these are people, at least some of these Sasquatch tribes, that they have this interdimensional capability and that they have this connection with us. I think that's one of the unspoken aspects of this, Mike, that if they make such an effort to interact with some of us, the hidden underlying message is, we have a connection with them. We've always had a connection with them, Mike.
Yeah. You know, and this too, James, if I went to my deathbed and so many thought I was just a hoaxer, you know, if everybody thought it was just a big hoax, at least I know I'm telling the truth, and I know they know I'm telling the truth, and that's what matters to me.
Well, thank you for coming back on the show, Mike. And we have a whole other segment with Mike Patterson sharing more of the interdimensional aspects of the Sasquatch tribe, Neff's tribe, that he's been interacting with. Could you tell us what your YouTube channel is, Mike?
Sasquatch Ontario. And I also have a website now, SasquatchOntario.com. You know, I've put some more content on there, but slowly but surely. And on the YouTube channel, there's quite a few. There's about, I don't know, 5+ dozen videos on there. And I'm working on another one too. So should have another one up shortly.
And to our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.